You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hun, you know how we're always talking about what podcasts we're listening to?
Not really.
I mean, not on the show, although we could.
Oh, yeah.
It could be a whole segment.
Yeah, we should think about that.
But you know how you and I just tell each other about the podcast we've discovered?
Yes, honey, I get it.
Right. So now I'm listening to Mallory Kasdan's The Milk Podcast, Moms I Like to Know.
Clever title. I like that.
It is. And you know I love a good mom podcast. Mallory interviews excellent women, authors, activists who happen to be moms. And I think there's some real intersectionality between her podcast and ours. Because Milk is like this dope interview format podcast like ours. And there's this one episode that I just listened to where she's interviewing Mina Harris. Do you know who she is, hon?
I've heard the name before.
She's the founder of the Phenomenal Women Action Campaign. Her mother, Maya, ran the 2020 presidential election campaign for her sister, drumroll please, Senator Kamala Harris.
Oh, that's how I know that name.
Right. Mina wrote this gorgeous children's book called Kamala and Maya's Big Idea about her mother and her aunt. And honestly, I think she'd make a great guest on our show. She's incredible.
Well, I just looked her up and I see that she's also a graduate of Stanford University and Harvard Business School and Head of Strategy and Leadership at Uber? That's crazy.
So impressive.
Right.
Mallory interviewed Mina right after COVID struck, and it's such a great episode. I wish we had snagged her first. In fact, I was so inspired that we're doing something we've never done before.
Hmm.
Milk is playing one of our episodes for her listeners this week. That's the Kimberly Russell episode, the only one who kept her promise,
yes,
right?
Yes, I love that episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to be sharing Milk's Mina Harris episode with you all.
This is our first real cross promotion.
It is. We're so excited. So please enjoy this episode of Milk. And don't forget to join us next week on Tuesday, July 7th for the first episode of our new season.
Holla, season 6.
Holla. Enjoy the episode.
I'm Mallory Kasdan, and this is the Milk Podcast. Every episode, I talk to a mom I'd like to know. Today, I'm talking to Mina Harris. Mina is the author of Kamala and Maya's Big Idea, an illustrated picture book based on a true story from the childhood of Mina's mom and aunt. In the book, two sisters make a difference in their community by dreaming big and fighting for what they believe in. It's an early lesson on the power of community organizing and an example of what Mina's grandmother always told her. Each of us has a role to play. Mina is the founder of the groundbreaking Phenomenal Women Action Campaign. She is a respected entrepreneur and is recognized as an influential voice for women's equality. Currently, Mina is head of strategy and leadership at Uber, where she leads brand transformation initiatives focused on corporate citizenship, customer loyalty, and employee engagement. In addition to Uber, she has advised major brands on diversity and inclusion. Mina is also an attorney with extensive experience in consumer protection, data privacy, and cybersecurity. She is a graduate of Stanford University and Harvard Business School, and she lives in San Francisco with her partner and two daughters. Mina believes that to fight for women's equality, we need to start with girls' equality. And her book focuses on listening to girls of color, supporting their big ideas, and following their lead. Here's our talk.
How old are your kids? You have two little girls, right?
Yeah, two girls. I have a two-year-old. She turned two in February. And I have an almost four-year-old. She'll be four, oh my God, in like 2 weeks. So time is like, it's like the, what is it, the saying? The days are long, the years are, wait, is that right?
Short.
Yeah, the years are short, days are
yes.
long. I'm like, I cannot put words together. It's always been kind of wild in our house.
You are in it right now.
You are in it. Yeah. How about you? You have more than one, and how old?
Yeah. I have a 13-year-old daughter and a almost 10-year-old son.
Oh, wow.
And, I think a lot of people, a lot of my friends, my contemporaries, we all keep saying, holy shit, if we had little kids. So I have to say to you, like, however you're getting through the day, it is God bless, because it is so hard with little ones. I mean, I ignore my kids a lot right now.
It's ignore.
I mean, we like, I am ignoring them, and I'm not, and they're missing out on stuff that like they care about at the
right,
end, especially the 13-year-old, right? But like the little ones just want you around. So
right.
It's more draining on you when you've got little kids, because you really have to like be with them all the time and navigate their littleness, right? But with older kids, you have to deal with all their disappointments of like the things that they want to do outside of you. Like they want to be with their friends. They want to like have a prom.
That's interesting perspective. Well, it's funny because when you said that and that you and your friends that have older kids that you're not envious of those of us that have younger kids, I've been thinking the opposite, which is like you have to deal with homeschooling. But I feel like your age range is like kind of a sweet spot, because, you know, I don't know, what is it, like 5 to 8 year olds are sort of in the middle, where you really have to be much more hands-on with both schooling and being a more sort of emotionally present parent, right? Whereas for us, we don't have formal homeschooling requirements. So I'm very thankful for that. We don't have to deal with, any of the online virtual learning stuff. And if we had to do that on top of everything else, I think I would just collapse. I mean, and parents are, right? Like you hear so many people talking about how they just can't keep up. And it's another full-time job. But it's interesting to hear your perspective of not, I mean, I, you know, work at a tech company, and so Zoom is very familiar to me. I could imagine, you know, again, like I'm not familiar with podcast equipment and technology, and it just feels so frustrating when you have no idea how to work something. You have to do it every day, multiple times a day. There's a great, it's either on Twitter or somewhere, but like a parody of the experience of being a parent, like here's the password for your first child, and here's the password for 3 p.m. for your second child, and here's another Zoom link, and here's, you know, an updated link because the other one got corrupted, or it's just like, it's nonstop.
I know, it's kind of hilarious. It really is. It really is. Well, I commend you for, being like awake and promoting your book and doing your work and getting through it.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Yeah, you've been through it. Yeah, that's a lot. It's hard. And I do the book tour part of it, you know, as much as that is hard, and you're traveling all around, like that part really sucks. Just not getting, especially with a kid's book. And I'm curious to hear about your experience, but like that's the, I assume that would have been the best part, is getting to interact with children and read it to them and see their reactions. The very first reading I did virtually, this was like last week, I guess, was for Atlanta Public Schools. And it was both, it made me really emotional. I mean, it was the first time I was reading my book aloud, you know, to a group of children. And it was wonderful, but it was also just like, ugh, you're missing that, you know, in-person connection.
I know.
And I was really looking forward to that, going to, you know, public schools and doing a whole thing, even beyond sort of the bookstore stuff. So anyway, you know, we're all pivoting and figuring out how to make the best of it, and everybody's going through something, but it's a tough time.
It really is. I mean, I think like your book is so adorable, and I want you to tell me the story about how it came about in a second. But what I will say to you is, because I'm on like a committee at my daughter, at my son's school to have authors come to the school. And everybody's been, you know, everybody's been pivoting. They already did Zoom sometimes, and like authors would they put the kids in the auditorium and authors would Skype in and stuff like that. But you're gonna get to do that with kids. I mean, it's, I think the thing is, it's just gonna be delayed, but you're gonna get to, your book now lives in the world. Like, you made a book, it's a thing. And eventually you are going to be able to make those connections with kids, and it will come. It's just gonna be delayed, which sucks. But but it will. And in the meantime, you'll do these and kids will love it. And but then when you get like in whenever it is, if it's in half a year or a whole year, and you get to be doing that, you're gonna get it, and it's gonna live on. Like, it's a timeless book now, right? Like, that's the cool thing, is like, little girls are always gonna be, little boys are always gonna be 5 to 8 years old, and they'll keep finding your book. And that's like what's really special about but I do understand, and I've had a bunch of authors on my podcast this season, and they've all had books come out in April and May. And it's just, you know, it's very disappointing to not to wait that whole time and wait on publication and then not be able to have like that part, which is about connecting with readers.
Exactly. And something that's so, you know, for most people, personal, and it's such a labor of love. I was just talking to somebody this morning about it's Connie Schultz. I think it's Sherrod Brown's wife. Her book just came out, and she's been working on it for 10 years, you know, and anyway.
I know there's there's lessons in this somewhere about
I think about all the time, like, when are we going to like really look back and just derive all of the wisdom and learnings from this? I'm like, it feels so far off, and I don't know what I'm supposed to be taking away right now, but one day I will. But I love what you just said, which is like, it's not as if, you know, it goes away. You're like, it's in the world. It's something that has permanence now, and I can continue building on it. And it's definitely a different perspective for me than what I've been used to with Phenomenal, my women's brand, which is campaign based. And so it's a lot of really fast paced sort of, you know, 2-week launch to get something out. And we have a big, you know, social media push, and then it kind of, it doesn't completely go away, but like, the campaign's over, right? People continue to support, but that sort of, you know, big push is done. And then you sort of move on to the next thing. And it's, I think, important to thank you for helping me to think about this maybe in a different way, which is, you know, it really is building it in the long term. And it's something I can continue to build on.
That's cool. So tell me about Phenomenal a little bit. You started it kind of after the 2016 election, and what was your intention initially with Phenomenal, your branding company?
Yeah.
Is that what you would call it? Would you call it a brand? Is it like,
it's a brand. Yeah. So it's a women's, I go back and forth. I'm still building it. So every day is new. It's still evolving. I've used the term lifestyle brand, which just feels weird, but it's a, you know, women powered brand, civic engagement platform that, brings awareness to social causes, and in particular, causes that, affect underrepresented communities. That's what it is today. When I launched it, it was never supposed to be much of anything other than a 1-month fundraising campaign for women's organizations. So as you mentioned, I, you know, launched it coming out of the 2016 election. I think like a lot of people in that moment felt a really strong responsibility to do something. And I had a t-shirt before it. Not everybody knows this, so I wasn't like new to the t-shirt game. But I had another t-shirt that was focused on women entrepreneurs. And so in that moment, I thought, you know, it was so focused on women, right? Obviously, that election and the outcome of it. And there's that big question, like, are women going to step up now, right, after this big defeat? And I thought, you know, what's something that I can do that's supportive and, you know, just do something. And so I decided to put Phenomenal Woman on a t-shirt. It's one of my favorite poems by Maya Angelou. And we were selling t-shirts to raise money for women's organizations. I launched it on International Women's Day, which is March 8th. And it was supposed to last for the month of March, which is Women's History Month. And, you know, I thought it would be a small thing. If you remember, lots of people were hosting fundraisers for, you know, Planned Parenthood and the ACLU, right, and other organizations that whose work was becoming so much more relevant during that time and continues to be, of course. And I thought we would sell like a couple hundred shirts, and we ended up selling 2,500 on the first day.
Nice.
And
wow.
Yeah, I just kept it going. I could have definitely walked away from it after we met our goal or exceeded our goal. But I looked at it, you know, as an entrepreneur and thought, you know, how can we reach more people? How can I keep building this? And still, I never thought I would still be talking about it and building it 3.5 years later. It was never supposed to be more than that, you know, 1 month campaign. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, here we are. And now I'm doing, you know, kids books. Never thought I was going to be doing that either. Just kind of, you know,
tell me
the flow here.
Hell yeah. That's right. That's the way to be. It's like, that's, you know, when something comes your way, having an idea, tell me about having your idea for your book. Like how did that, what's the book? What's it called? First of all,
my book is called Kamala and Maya's Big Idea. And it's sort of similar. It was a couple of sort of moments that I was having. One, also, you know, coming out of the election where we were seeing, you know, this heightened civic engagement and people, right, wanting to get involved in their communities and get involved with organizations and, you know, speaking up, going to marches. And it really had me thinking, especially as the, you know, mother of two young children, you know, how am I raising my kids in this moment? And how am I talking to them about this stuff? How am I, you know, sort of injecting this into my household much in the same way that I was raised, where it's sort of all around me all the time, this focus on social justice, right? And doing good in your community, however you can. So it was very personal to me and thinking about sort of carrying on that, you know, legacy of being in this family of really strong, powerful women who taught me, you know, every day that I needed to, you know, come up with big ideas and go after them and that I could go after them, and thinking about, you know, passing that on to my own daughters. And it also coincided with, again, becoming a new mom and reading children's books with my now older daughter and feeling like there wasn't, you know, representation of characters that looked like her and, mm-hmm. You know, that she could relate to, whether it, you know, was her brown skin or curly hair, right? Or, you know, again, the way that we were raising them and sort of the issues that we talked to them about. And so I wanted to put that in a book. And I felt like if I am not seeing it, like I'm just going to go do it myself. And so I thought, you know, why don't I build on some of those stories that I, you know, heard growing up and put it in a book. So it's all about, it's actually based on a true story from the childhood of my mom and aunt. And it's all about, you know, two sisters coming up with an idea. It's really about problem solving, right? Like seeing an issue and deciding that they're going to do something about it. And it's a lesson, an early lesson in community organizing, really, you know, leaning on your community. And it's an example of what my grandmother taught all of us, which is that each of us has a part to play, no matter how small. And each of us has a responsibility and a role to do our part. And what I love about it, and again, in terms of what I'm teaching my kids, it's persevering in the face of no and people telling you you're too small or you're too young or it can't be done. It's too expensive. And they stick with it and they see it through. And it's a really beautiful thing that they do for their community.
It almost made me cry because, first of all, because, you know, it involves kids playing outside and building something together. And
right.
I was like, it's very timely that, like, you know, even that, just the idea, that opportunity to play with other children, it made me sad, but also it made me very hopeful because it's like, you know, it's about girl power, which I hate.
Exactly.
Kind of, it's a little derivative to say that. I don't love like that phrase necessarily,
sure.
But
yeah.
But it felt like, yes, these girls, you know, they're sisters and they get, you know, they have an idea and they want to build something and people are saying no to them. And then it's truly like the spirit of, yes, you have this skill and I have that skill and you're somebody who won't, you know, back down because you just keep going at people and that's a skill. You know what I mean? It's
exactly.
Like, I think about like we always tell my older daughter is pretty scrappy. She's pretty like, she's noisy and, you know, it's great and we're proud of that, but you know, it can be really challenging as a parent to have a kid who literally is like, you know, a litigator, you know? But we also
and that was
say
definitely
like,
me as a kid, that's definitely my older child too. I'm like, are you a lawyer? What is going on? And I'm like, oh, of course she is. Like, you're my child.
That's hilarious. And you became a lawyer, right? You are a lawyer.
I did. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that was my household, but part of it is, you know, I was challenged as well by my mom, my aunt, and my grandmother, who, you know, I had lots of ideas and creative ideas, and I was challenged by them to think about how I could, you know, actually execute on them, right? And what do you need to get it done, right? How do you see something through? How do you stick with it and make it happen, even despite, you know, whatever barriers make it in your way? And I think that in many ways, that's also, you know, what it means to be an entrepreneur. That's what it means to, you know, be a problem solver, right? It's, so it's like really, I think, essential kind of like fundamental values, not only, you know, about helping your community, but also just how do you get things done? And how do we teach our girls that? How do we teach all of our children that, you know, girls have big ideas worth pursuing and supporting, and seeing young girls as leaders and, you know, following them? And so there's so many different lessons, and it's just been really fun to, you know, not only think about how I'm reading it and teaching it, so to speak, to my own girls, but how others will, what others will take from it, right? And that you mentioned in this moment as well, I think it's almost even more relevant because people are doing just that, right? They're thinking about how I can help my neighbor. Whether it's, you know, going grocery shopping for an elderly neighbor or sewing a mask and, you know, donating it to a frontline worker or donating to a food bank. I think we're seeing these incredible acts of humanity. And so as much as there are maybe depressing elements of what was in terms of kids being able to go outside and play with one another, I think there's also a lot of lessons in, you know, what we can do in this moment to help each other.
Right. And it's about trying to figure out how to sort of like frame it in a way of we are compromising for something. Like what is it that we're, you know, we need, there's a lot of vulnerable people and we have to sort of like, we're doing this because there's vulnerable, like we're staying home because there's other people that are more vulnerable to getting sick than us. Like that's the framing of just like the stay at home order. Right. But, but beyond that, it's like, well, what, why are you here? You know, what are you doing like for your community? What are you doing for, you know, people in the world beyond just living in the world and going to school and being a kid? Like, I do think it's important to kind of create that for kids.
And it's about having a sense of purpose, right? Whatever that is in whatever unique way you express that, but it's showing up with purpose and intention instead of sort of, you know, passively experiencing the world. And again, like these are kids. I don't want to be sounding like.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's not.
You know, but I think too, it's a reminder for myself as a parent. And that's sort of why I initially wrote it, which is that I grew up in a very, in many ways, a unique way. And I really value that now. And as a new mom, I was really thinking about, you know, how do I emulate that? How do I replicate that? Or at least adapt it, right, to like our current circumstances and share that with my own children. And so in that way, too, it's a reminder that it does, you know, as a parent, take in the same way, it takes commitment, right? Like you have to decide, I'm going to be intentional with my kids to sort of, you know, teach them this and immerse them in this. It doesn't have to be every single day at the dinner table. By the way, it literally was for me growing up. It was sort of constant. So it was a little bit more intense, but I think there's ways that we can sort of decide, all right, this is how I'm going to approach this and be intentional about that.
Do you have siblings or was
no, it? No. And so it's funny to kind of, I have this, I don't want to say fascination, but I've always been kind of fascinated by the sibling relationship because not only was I an only child, but I was like a super only child because as I said, my family unit growing up was really me, my mom, and my grandma was basically a single mom. I had a single mom. My aunt didn't have any children at the time. And so I was a super, super only child. My, you know, observations around siblings were through the relationship of my mom and aunt. And that's something that I now really cherish, sort of this parallel with my grandmother raising her two daughters. And now I have my two daughters, right? And thinking about, you know, what she did and how I can kind of pass that on. I'm an only child. And so I had a lot of attention. And in many ways, I was sort of treated like an adult. I was talked to and engaged with, you know, like an adult. And again, maybe that was like a matter of circumstance. I was, you know, sort of the only kid in this household. But I also think that there were really important elements to that, which, as I said, were like, if you are participating in a dinner table conversation and you have something to share, great, share it. If you have an argument to make, make it, but you better be able to back it up, right? You better, if you have an idea, you should start thinking about how you, you know, really build towards that and come up with the tools to do that. So as I said, it was formative for me growing up in that way. And it's something that I think about, you know, how I can take some of those values and lessons and apply them to my own, you know, parenting.
We're going to take a quick break for some ads and we'll be right back.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
I'm back with Mina Harris.
The book has a feel, a little bit of a throwback feel, because maybe it's because at the end you sort of show a picture of your mom and aunt, and they're like, little like 70s badass girls.
I know,
girls.
Right. I love that photo.
And that was, it's funny that you say that because it wasn't necessarily intentional, but that's where, that's what I was imagining, right? I was imagining, this photo of them, I remember it was, it sat on my grandmother's bookshelf in the foyer of her house forever and ever. And as a kid, I just loved this photo. I mean, it looked like they had like just conquered the world. And it's just so almost representative too of who they are and who they were. My mom was very athletic and into sports. Kamala, not at all. But my mom is, you know, has this bandana on and she's holding the ball. And, you know, they just look really powerful. And that's sort of, I loved when I was growing up in that household, hearing stories about their childhood and growing up in Berkeley in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned about thinking about your mom back at that, in that moment, same, I had all these images in my head of my grandmother and the civil rights movement. And there were so many, you know, being at Berkeley, right, during that time and my grandparents meeting. Yep. And there's just all this visual memory and, you know, me imagining what that must have been like. And it wasn't intentional, but it clearly came through. And I love that. And something else you said about it not being intense, I really appreciate that because that's a part of sort of what I'm trying to convey, which is that it just is like, it doesn't have to be an intense, right? Like thing.
Yes. 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 It's a lesson, like
exactly
in your face, like, you know, this, yeah, I think I really understand what you're saying about. Go on, though, because I interrupted you. Please go on.
Well, no, but that's exactly right. I think about all of this sort of, you know, how to talk to your kids about race and how to talk to your kids about racism. And those things are surely important. And there's a time and a place for them. But there's also a way to just sort of, you know, let this stuff marinate and let it kind of run through, you know, the day to day. And it doesn't have to be that intense. And I think in this moment, and I've spent the last 3 years through Phenomenal talking to adult women who are like, what can I do? How can I do more? Right. I don't want to call myself an activist, but I want to, you know, do more. And there are definitely like step-by-step things you can do and tools, but part of it is just like deciding. And you know, that's the first step of like, I want to do more. I'm going to speak up more. I'm going to learn more about an issue. I'm going to, you know, talk to my friends about it. It can be really simple stuff that's really meaningful. And again, if you commit to it and you do it, you know, continuously over time, it means a lot. And for yourself, for, you know, how your kids turn out, right?
Yeah.
It's just kind of really basic stuff.
It's also
important
about
to keep top of mind.
It's also about representation, which is like, you know, having books about little two like brown sisters, having
Absolutely.
Books about, you know, films about, you know, with a lead character who's the action hero, you know, who's a woman, who is
right.
a woman of color. I mean, that's where it doesn't all come from that, but certainly like these images, you know, we look at images and we look at art and we look at film and we need those faces and
Absolutely.
Those voices. So,
and again, it just is, it doesn't have to be the film called, you know,
right.
But as a
right.
lead character, Superwoman, whatever, like that, it just is. Women leaders exist and we should see them. Right. And in that
yep.
way, as I said, it's so important for boys to see this book. Right. And, in terms of representation, we still have a lot of work to do in children's literature where Marley Diaz, who's this young education book activist, says it's like another book about a white boy and his dog. And it's true. Like in 2018, there were as many books that had animal characters as there were books that had Black, Latinx, Asian, and Native characters combined. And again, as much as we're seeing, you know, progress, still oftentimes the main, you know, there's a diverse cast of characters, but they're supporting characters, right? They're not the main protagonist. So I think it's just important to think about what message that sends. And especially for young boys, I mean, this ties directly into, you know, later on how they see women and
yep.
right respect women. And it's about seeing girls as fully formed people and humans capable of saying yes and no and having big ideas that are worth supporting. Like this is just really important stuff that we know makes a difference later on. And
yeah.
so in that way, I think it's just as important for, you know, all the women's equality stuff you talked about, Gloria Steinem and that show. And this stuff starts really young. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know much about her upbringing, but I bet, you know, she was learning this stuff early, too.
Well, what made me think about it was I was because I'm watching this show, and it's basically just about community building in, mm-hmm. and within the organization. So it's like all the stuff that still happens in feminism and sort of how we have coalitions and how, you know, not everyone because it's about politics, not everyone always agrees and you have mm-hmm. to somehow compromise. And I just was thinking about your story, which is a small story of two little girls who have an idea and go to grownups and ask them to help them execute the idea. And the grownups really are not interested. And then the kids kind of get a bunch of consensus from their neighbors, from the neighbor kids, and they all have a shared goal. But mm-hmm. there has to be like somebody who's in charge, right?
Right,
I mean, usually
right.
that's how this stuff works. But it's about like, I think women naturally sort of tend to build consensus amongst each other. Now, certainly that's a generalization. And the reason I'm thinking about this is because this show last night was all about how some groups are able to do that and some groups are not able to do that. But in this story, the girls are the bosses.
Exactly.
And the girls are sort of leading this crew of neighborhood kids. And I think by casually reading that book, a little boy would be like, well, of course a girl is going to be the boss of this group.
Right.
Like
exactly.
It doesn't have to be so. It's pretty simple, but also not often done enough so that
right.
it's
and
take
we need
it for
more
granted.
Of that. Yeah. And
right.
that was
Absolutely.
Also part of my inspiration where as a new mom, it sort of coincided with all of the, you know, what's become much more common, which is like this feminist literature that are like lists of women in history, right? Like
yeah.
Rad Women A to Z and Rebel
yeah.
Girls. And we have every single one of those books. But there came a point where I was like, I'm tired of reading lists of women. It's sort of like the binders of women, like in history, right? Many of them are dead. And like my daughter, it's important. I want to teach her that stuff. But what about just like regular characters just being in the world, right?
Yeah.
That she can see herself in. And that, again, boys and other children can just see and let them just exist. It doesn't have to be the book about women.
Yeah.
Right. And because we know that when you are not intentional or when you're not putting that front of mind, the default is that it's a white boy and his dog, you know, as Marley Diaz has phrased it. So I do hope that we see more of that. And this is just my, you know, small contribution.
I'm sure your daughters are really psyched. I mean, are they impressed with you? Like, do they think you're amazing or like, what's the deal?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, building on just that kids, what they see, you know, and what is interesting to them, like they want to emulate that thing. They want to be that thing. And when my older daughter understood that, you know, mommy's writing a book and here's mommy's book, you know, it took like a week and it almost took me a minute to understand what was going on. But she came upstairs and said, I need tape. I need to tape all these pages. You know, she draws all the time and is constantly grabbing sheets of paper, but she really needed tape to tape them all together. And I said, what are you taping? And she said, I'm making a book. Aww. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, oh my God, it's because she knows mommy's making a book. Right. So they're still young and I've actually not yet sat down and read it from beginning to end. I don't know what I'm waiting for. It just feels like such a big, important moment that I've been so busy, like trying to get it out and get all the pre-order stuff out. But I'm really excited to kind of like finally do it. I've been saving it up. I don't know what I'm waiting for.
That's so sweet. No, I understand. It's a big deal.
They're definitely, they're excited. And the other part of it that is just so fun is that they know it's about, you know, grandma and auntie. And so one of the things I'm struggling with is like, do I change the names from Kamala and Maya to grandma and auntie? Because they're definitely going to be, by the way, grandma and auntie are going to be very unhappy with me if my kids start calling them Kamala and Maya or know that that's their real names. My children definitely know my first name, right? Because they hear my partner calling me by my first name. But they don't, I don't think they know that grandma's name is Maya and Kamala is auntie. I'm sorry, that auntie is Kamala. So if that happens to this book, it's going to be an issue.
Uh-oh. Maybe do both names.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, or just start out with, you know, grandma, and then you can go back to like auntie and grandma.
But it's funny because, you know, there's this what are they called? Like a superhero, not a superhero, but like a little a figurine doll of Kamala that was made, I think it came out like last year, and we have like 10 of them. And my kids are like, where's the auntie doll? Or, you know, playing with it. Auntie, walk faster, auntie. And are like playing with this doll. And so similarly, it's going to be another thing that, you know, it's just fun.
It's so fun
to do that. Yeah.
Is your mom older or who's older?
No, my mom is the younger one. So they're, okay. I think, like 2.5 years apart, almost 3 years apart. Kamala is very much the older sister.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny to just see the different, you know, especially with my own kids, like the personality differences and the dynamic between the older and the younger. Yours are a boy and a girl, right? So
Yeah.
Interesting.
And but I grew up with sisters, so I have like a lot of sister memories of like I was the oldest, and I have a sister 2 years younger, and then we have a littler sister, and we did there was a lot of like me bossing my sister around, and like lemonade stands where we'd raise money, and just like all kinds of those sorts of projects, which is so cute. Now she bosses me around, because she's sort of like more of the boss. But at the time, I maintained the boss status for as a young person for a bit. And,
I love it.
Tell me about – and so I think I read that you're giving a big proportion of – you're getting books to this We Need Diverse Books organization. Can you tell me – is that true? Yes. That's right.
So,
right?
It's been really amazing to partner with We Need Diverse Books. As the name of the organization suggests, they're all about getting more diverse literature into the hands of all children. Mm-hmm. And we've done a couple things with them. We did a teacher giveaway. And
nice.
I think we gave away something like 200 copies to teachers in school districts all over the country. We had tons of teachers enter. I mean, it was one of those moments where I just wish I could give away thousands of books. And I frankly had plans to do that and thinking, you know, ahead about how can I get more books donated to public schools. Speaking of, right, representation and, you know, children who don't often have access, not only to those sorts of, you know, materials, but also ones that look like them and represent them. We did a big teacher giveaway. We also have a donate a book initiative where regular folks can go to phenomenalwoman.us and donate a book. So it's been really great working with them. And, you know, it's kind of tying together what we do through Phenomenal in terms of raising awareness around, you know, important issues, and then tying it to something like, you know, a book, an actual, you know, book, or in the case of other things we do, like t-shirts and other things like that to raise awareness. So yeah, it was another just amazing moment to see how excited teachers were to get this. And we received tons of messages from people saying, you know, we need more of this. And it's really important for me to, you know, promote diverse literature to my classroom. And hearing directly from folks, especially in this moment where I can't connect with people in person, was, you know, really meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm going to get one to our librarian at our school, and I'm sure he'll love it. I was going to say, so my book that I wrote,
yes,
is you know, it's a parody of Eloise, and so my illustrator came up with what this little girl was going to look like, and she's brown, and it was so amazing to see her. Like, that decision was not my decision, but it was such a cool decision, and it made so much sense. The fact that, like, my character is sort of a fancy kid, but she's brown,
right,
she lives in a hotel, and she has a manny, and it's like, it's totally Eloise, you know, but it's just her sort of in 2016. I feel like now when people, I just actually had someone on my podcast who I met through the book, because my book is called Ella, and the character is this really cute, adorable, like, kind of hipster kid with kinky hair. She's brown, so I think she could be a lot of different nationalities. She could be a lot of a mix. But people, this woman that I met through Instagram, her daughter's name is Ella. Her grandmother bought her the book because she felt like it was totally her daughter. And then the mom and I became friends on Instagram because she kept sending me photos of her daughter dressed up as, for book character day, she dressed up as Ella. And
that's great.
It was nice for me. I mean, I'm a white woman, but I was so pleased, like, with what you said, which was just representation and just having all these characters. And the book itself has a lot of different kinds of people, because again, my illustrator has a really interesting background and is just a very open guy and sort of created. Plus, it's a Brooklyn book, so there's a lot of different colored people and different gendered people and people doing things. And it means a lot to me too. You know, it means a lot that people are represented as they live in the world that I live in. Right?
Exactly. Like, I had a friend reach out similarly, saying, you know, thank you for this. She's white, and her son is half Chinese. And she said, I want, you know, to have books where there are, you know, main characters that are Asian that are not, like, about Chinese New Year or, things that are sort of so explicitly, again, those are important. Like, let's not diminish that.
Yeah.
But it's also, I mean, we're having this conversation in Hollywood as well right now in terms of, you know, how we're casting. Like, why can't James Bond be a black man, right? Or a fucking woman. How about that? Like, sorry, excuse my language. But,
it's okay.
Right? Like, let's just show what can exist and already exists in the world, right? We just need to see more of it. But I love that. What's interesting to me, though, is that you said you didn't know that initially, that your illustrator sort of, you know, decided. And I'm curious about that process for you as an author, because I had such a different experience where that was so, you know, central
part of it.
And it was, you know, definitely not a surprise. And in fact, you know, I had a lot of back and forth. I love my illustrator so much. And she was very patient with me, but there were so many things related to appearance that I wanted to get right. And, you know, such as the hair texture, right? Mm-hmm. Or what the inside of the house looked like. And did it look sort of similar to the house that they grew up in, where there were, like, lots of Indian, you know, cultural things, motifs and others that things that my grandmother was very intentional about putting around the house, things like that, you know, like mango print and other things like that. Anyway, but it's so interesting that, your illustrators, it sounds like they had much more sort of creative freedom to imagine what the characters looked like.
Well, it's cool because I think the publisher came up with that. I mean, I guess it's basically like because the book, my book was basically me taking something that was a classic kind of character and making sort of gentle fun of it in the process, making fun of like my own world that I live in, Brooklyn, which is like
reaching
this sort of precious point at that point where it was like you just wanted to make fun of, you know, people like even myself. And so
a bit of changing the the original to and kind of flipping it on its head.
But I don't think, and I didn't have the control of what the character would look like. I mean, I can't draw and I can't even really conceive I'm much more of a words person. So what was cool is like they chose him because they knew what his work looked like. But I think that they made the decision at the publisher and then with Marcus, the illustrator, of what this character would look like. And so it was just exciting to me that was the direction that they went in. And it was really awesome. And not, it wasn't that it was surprising. It's just that I didn't purposely write a character, but she could have been anyone. She was a 6-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really cool. And I can't imagine her being anyone else than she is. She's just, you know, she's this really cute, beautiful, like little girl. I'll send you guys.
Yeah,
a book.
No, I've seen, I want to get it for my girls. I love that. And it's so fun to, I'm just more and more as I've been, you know, becoming an author, it's all new.
Yeah.
But hearing the stories of other authors, and how, you know, their books came to be. And what I've learned about my process, you know, thinking about, you said that yours was much more guided by you as a writer, right? Versus being a visual person. And as much as I'm, you know, trained as a lawyer, writing is very sort of central to who I am. This was much more guided by my creative side and the visual side.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that earlier, right? Like I was imagining Maya and Kamala as these two girls growing up in the 70s, looking at that, you know, these old pictures of them that inspired me. And the final product is much more close, is much closer to sort of my initial, like I sketched it out, you know, I was doing, and I'm not like a huge draw or anything like that, but it's much more true to my original vision than it is to like the words that I wrote, which is so interesting to hear how your process was different.
Yeah. Well, it gave me my particular experience gave me such respect for artists and people that can kind of can take ideas and visualize them because I'm jealous. I'm so jealous. Like in trying to come up with other concepts for children's books, I've just felt really weirdly frustrated. Like, I wish I could draw and write. You know, how great would that be? Because it's sort of like, I don't know. It's you see something in your mind, right? Or you have inspiration from a photograph or an experience or something. And
but especially for kids' books, I mean, that's what I learned. Part of it, I had way too much text, right? Like I had to cut down so much as like, you know, a verbose, like a lawyer writing like a legal brief or, right? I mean, it was way too much. And I agree. I really learned as much as I had a visual image in my head. There's a lot that I had to cut down and it was amazing to see her, the illustrator, be able to bring to life those words that I had to cut right through the illustrations.
Absolutely.
In ways that I surely could not have done with my kind of crappy sketches.
Yeah, it's a really interesting art, like in terms of just the how it has to be spare in order to keep kids' interest, and that what illustrations can do in the place of certain words. Like
absolutely.
It's fascinating, actually.
And especially with young kids, I mean, so much of it takes, at least for me, a long time to read through books because they're looking at it and saying, what's that? What's she holding? Look, what's that up in the sky, right? Like they're not, because they can't read. So they're listening to you, but they're really captivated by the artwork. So
definitely. Definitely. Well, it's so cute. I'm really proud of you, even though I don't know you. I'm just happy that you had an idea and it came to fruition. That's so cool. And I know how hard things are to do. I'm very happy for you. Congratulations. And I'm excited for you to get it out in the world so little girls come up to you and take pictures of themselves and send them to you and all of that, because it's a really lovely.
Oh, that's awesome. I can't wait.
It's a great thing. And your kids are going to be so excited when you do a bookstore event and you're the famous author. And it's great.
Yeah, I'm excited.
It's really cool.
It'll be fun to, you know, we're doing the virtual thing, and, you know, figuring out how to do stuff at home with our kids. And it's really special to have something to say, you know, I made this and I'm now sharing it with you. It's just a really amazing. And to hold it in your hand for the first time. Oh my gosh. That was like next level. Really quite more meaningful and emotional and special than I could have imagined, actually holding it in my hand. In part, I mean, like, I don't know why when I was looking at, you know, the cover, the digital artwork, I imagine it's smaller. I don't know. I just felt like, oh my God, it's real. It's a really amazing feeling as an author, first time author, especially.
Amazing. Well, congratulations. I wish you a lot of luck with it. And it was really lovely talking to you. And I hope the leaf blower goes away.
I know. Sorry about that. After we spent all that time talking about sound quality and all these podcasts I've been doing this first time, it's like a loud ass lawnmower outside. Sorry about that.
It's hilarious. Don't worry about it. This is real life.
Right? It's just totally unfiltered realness. Thank you. It's so fun. I've really, as I said, loved talking to other authors. It's super new to me. I don't know how much you've sort of expanded your author friend community, but it's been really special to me. So thanks for inviting me, and stay connected.
It's great to have you, especially because you've done so. I mean, I think the really cool thing about, creative work is that usually people bring all kinds of stuff to it. So you have all of these fundraising skills, you have all these organizing skills, so it matters, because a lot of people, don't have those skills. So it's good. Everyone's got a part. It's just what you say.
Bringing your unique self to whatever it is. Exactly.
Everyone plays a role. Everyone's got a role to play.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I hope you have a great rest of your day. Nice to meet you.
You too. Take care. Stay safe and healthy. That's how we're ending all of our conversations now.
I know. Exactly. Thanks,
Mina. Thank you so much. All right. Take care. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you so much to Mina Harris. Her new picture book, Kamala and Maya's Big Idea, is important for all children to read. Picture books need diverse narrators, and we need more of them. The book can be purchased through a link on phenomenalgirl.com, and you can follow Mina at Mina Harris and Phenomenal on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks today to Evan Benjamin for editing and mixing this show. Thanks to Nicole Alafante for her song Before I Go, which is playing under me talking right now. If you like Milk, please tell a friend or 10. And if you can review the show on iTunes, it really does help more people find me. Follow me at Milk Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Say hi. This spring has been a really difficult time, and I have appreciated getting to listen to and learn from wonderful women who are making art, educating others, and standing up for peace and justice. I hope we can heal from the racial injustice and police brutality inflicted on Black people in this country. And I hope we can keep working to ensure that women and girls are safe and equal. I promise to listen and to learn and to highlight more diverse voices on this podcast and in my life. I hope we can all be healthy again and hug and high-five each other for all that we all do. Thank you for listening. More soon from my Milks.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.